Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. I told you guys I was going to get to the rest of your questions eventually or at the soonest I possibly could. I wanted to have Sean Mason on the show just to get as much information out there as I possibly could about, you know, holding Genie accountable. If this whole idea of hiring via proximity or for proximity blows up in her face, what can be done there? I did a little bit more research myself and found that it's a little bit more complicated. Remember, Jim and Johnny stepped in to try to take Jeannie Buss's seat on the Board of Governors and rip it out from under her. And as a result, she filed a temporary restraining order on them and then lifted the restraining order after the court ordered or the court oversaw their case. And the result of that was basically that Jim had to resign as a trustee. He still benefits from the trust, but he doesn't have a vote on it anymore. And now this is where it gets a little convoluted, it gets a little complicated, but Johnny essentially is now forced to vote for Jeannie. For now, every single year they vote whether or not they trust her to continue to acting in the best interests of the trust and managing the Lakers. The result of that case, however, was that Johnny now has to vote for her every year, and then Janie replaced Jim. So now the voters on this board are Johnny, Jesse, and Joey. One day we'll figure out what Jerry's infatuation with the letter J was, but we'll come back to that, I guess, maybe at some point. But what that essentially means, though, mathematically speaking, Jeannie's always going to vote for herself. Janie has pledged her support of Jeannie, and Johnny is now ordered by the court to vote for Jeannie. So even if Jesse and Joey are unhappy with the way that the Lakers are being run, there isn't really much they can do in terms of voting for her. Now, this is under the best of my understanding that I have not read the trust directly. I'm just going off of research I did over the last few days, and you know, these things might have changed too, which is worth keeping an eye on as well. So technically speaking, there is no way because of the way that court case went, the trust itself, the siblings that are involved in this trust, it's going to be kind of hard for them to force Jeannie to step down. That said, and while Jeannie has never said this, if it gets to a point where it is so embarrassing and the Lakers are so screwed because of the choices that Jeannie has made, I don't know if Jeannie will ever flip her vote, but Jeannie might actually at some point say, you know what, this isn't working out, and step down as the person who is in charge of the Lakers and the trust. In which case, maybe Janie steps up. All these J names are confusing. I'm sorry. Either Janie steps up, or Jesse or Joey steps up. And in that case, if it's Jesse or Joey, that's kind of the scenario that Pete and I have been kind of hoping for all along. I don't think, however, under any circumstances for the foreseeable future, Janie will flip her vote, or Janie will flip her vote on whether or not the Buss family as a whole sells their team. Ramona Shelburne went on ESPN and said that, you know, not for a while. That is not going to happen for a while. So still interesting information nonetheless. I just wanted to clarify based on the research that I did. Now, that's not, again, to say that Sean was outright wrong or anything like that. He might have different information that he found, that he has personally or whatever, and I'm operating under the information that I was able to find. So sometimes information flies in the face of itself. Let's get to your guys' questions, though. I want to start with the first question here comes from I Miss D'Lo. I do, too. Hi, Anthony. First off, I just wanted to thank you for all the great work you do for the show. Thanks. This is one of my favorite podcasts, along with Jalen and Jacoby and Bill Simmons pod. Some pretty great company are keeping me in there. I appreciate that. I have learned so much about the game from listening to you, Harrison and Pete, on nearly a daily basis. Hypothetical, do you think the family sells the Lakers in the next 5 years? No, I don't think so. It's scary to think that this season could have just been the beginning of something absolutely catastrophic for a once historic franchise. I could see a scenario where Jeannie never realizes that Lakers exceptionalism doesn't work and the team never wins a championship with LeBron and the Buss family is pressured into selling the team. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much. So I already went into this, but I would add to it, I do think, so where I think Jeannie is different from Jim Dolan, where I hope Jeannie is different from Jim Dolan, is that she actually hears the outcry. I think she cares about the outcry. Now, whether she hears that and just calls everybody haters, that's you know, something to be concerned about. But as of right now, I do think the one thing that separates, well, there's another thing too that separates her from Jim Dolan. Jim has a fortune elsewhere. He's going to make money off of MSG no matter what's going on. And so him losing a couple million here and there in revenue and stuff like that with the Knicks, that's not going to bother him. That's not going to affect him in the same way that it might affect Jeannie and the rest of her siblings. So you combine that, you know, the fact that Jeannie and her siblings are kind of sort of waiting on a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar payday that they could enjoy. It's fair to assume, though, based on things that I've seen and heard about Jeannie, that she does legitimately care, and that she does legitimately hear some of the outcry for what the hell are we doing here, right? And to compare that to Jim Dolan, maybe that's the light at the end of the tunnel. Now, ideally speaking, I would prefer that the Busses get it at some point. You know, I would prefer that Jeannie wake up and realize that despite her abandonment issues, what is best for the Lakers isn't necessarily what she is most comfortable with. And the sooner that she recognizes that, if this Majinka 2.0 experiment that is going on right now, in which she entrusted Rob Pelinka with all of this power, if that fails, the sooner that she recognizes that, the better. And if she doesn't, and the fans get loud enough to the point where she can't be seen on a Jumbotron, or if she is shown on the Jumbotron, she gets booed, I think she feels that a lot more than Jim Dolan would. All right, let's take a quick second here, pay a couple bills, and when we come back, I am going to continue answering your questions. All right, the next question here comes from JNam00. Magic's the reasons for resigning from the position make a lot of sense. You're right, he is a billionaire and doesn't need to work this hard and function under all these rules that he never has had to function under before he took this job. Not everyone values his front office position in the same way. Once again, he is a billionaire, and for him to have to walk on eggshells all the time, to speak his mind and have an opinion on something, doesn't make sense for him. He did the Lakers a bad thing by taking the job, but he did us a good thing by stepping down so quickly. All right. So, I've been getting this a lot, and I saw this a lot in the analysis immediately after Magic Johnson stepped down. This idea that, like, because Magic is now happy, I have to respect his desire to be happy. Which is like, it sounds nice, right? But imagine cheating on your significant other and telling her or him that you did this in order to be happy. I was happy in that moment. Do you think she's respecting that decision, right? And you know, no, Magic didn't go out there and cheat on it. Well, cheat on anybody. We didn't get to that point, obviously, right? It's not apples to apples here in comparing that. But this idea that I have to respect Magic acting in an otherworldly, unprofessional manner. Borderline cowardly manner. Remember, he said he couldn't do what he did. He couldn't step down in a professional manner because Jeannie would talk him out of it, or that they would cry and weep, and that eventually she would convince him not to do it, right? And that he couldn't stand to see her face as he did it. Like, that's, sorry, man, but that's still very unprofessional. And it put the Lakers in a hugely terrible spot, right? Like, and now, yes, to the point that J-Nam makes here, the Lakers are in a better spot because he stepped down. He was that bad an executive. He was that difficult to work with. He was that inconsistent a worker, right? But that doesn't make it so, like, this idea that his reasons for stepping down make sense, or that I have to respect him for his decision because he wanted to be happy. That's not how it works. That's not how I operate. That's not how I am comfortable or capable of operating. I lost a ton of respect for him during his time as a Lakers executive, and then after the way he resigned. And that's before, by the way, we get to all of the stuff that we could get to whenever this ESPN report drops, if it ever actually drops. So, yeah, he is a billionaire, and he has every right to try to be happy or whatever, but he signed a contract. He made a commitment, and he backed out of that commitment and put somebody he considers a sister in an awful spot. An awful spot. And that was just wrong. All right. Next question here comes from Money Mike H. What's up, dude? Let's say you were to switch Phil and put Coach Pop for every year that Phil was with the Lakers. How many titles would they have won? Would it still be five? Maybe more, maybe less. I still think they win five. I mean, the talent that they won with in the Kobe Shaq era was just astronomical, right? You had two top five players in the league at the time, if not higher, right? Maybe top three, depending on how you feel about, you know, the Duncans and the KGs and whatever. And then not only did you have those players there, but Jerry West did a really, really good job of filling in the gaps around them and managing the margins so as to supplement those guys' talents. And in 3 different years, right? He put together 3 very different teams that were able to win. My one thing with Pop, and then also the Kobe and Powell team was really good and was on the cusp, I think, of the modern style of basketball where, like, if Pop was able to get Powell to shoot threes in the ways that he was able to when Powell went down to San Antonio, then that team would have been outrageous, right? Could you imagine Powell being able to step out and hit threes and Andrew, the amount of space that Kobe would be able to operate with and Bynum would have been able to operate with. And then that's if Powell and Bynum were in there at the same team, at the same time. Those lineups where Lamar was out there and Powell was out there, if Powell was able to step out and hit threes during that time, like, that team would have been borderline impossible to guard. So I think in that case, they also win a couple there too. So I think Phil and Pop are comparable coaches. The one knock that I have on Powell, or not on Powell, on Pop, is this: he can sometimes outthink himself in big moments. He randomly benched Kawhi Leonard in a third game of a final, or in the third quarter of a finals game, and never really explained it. There's the that incredible shot that Ray Allen hit to send the series, I believe, to a game 7 in the Miami and San Antonio series. That happened with Duncan on the bench, and Duncan was sitting there on the bench at a time when it was a free throw. So all you needed to do was put him in there and hope he gets a rebound. I didn't really understand that decision. So, you know, maybe I think they're comparable enough coaches though, Phil and Pop, that Pop winds up winning as many titles with either of those Lakers teams as Phil did. And that's not, you know, people are going to say, oh, you hate Pop or you hate Phil. No, they're both, in my opinion, maybe the two of the greatest coaches that American professional or any level of sports have ever seen. Next, we'll go one more question here, and then we'll send it to the break. F. Golden, I think is how I'm supposed to pronounce this. They write, love the show. Thanks. You've kept me company for years on my morning jogs. You're in better shape than I am. Thanks for the good pod, the good job you do. Don't you think that the Lakers ousting Luke and Rob Pelinka, writing the press release signals our worst fear? Oh, don't you think that the Lakers ousting Luke and then Rob writing that press release signals our worst fear? Rob is staying in a PBO, president of basketball operations capacity, perhaps hiring an assistant GM. Otherwise, the order of operations here doesn't make sense. I love the Lakers, but they seem to be the only ones that don't get they should stop keeping it in the family. I mean, we've been making these points for forever, and yeah, that is the writing on the wall. Now, for whatever reason, Twitter was running with a report from Colin Cowherd, of all people, which, like, look, Colin is one of the best radio. He's supremely talented at radio. It takes a ton of personality and ability to host a 4-hour show by oneself. That said, if you're going with a report from Colin Cowherd and it's not backed up by Woj, by Ramona, by any of the beat people, if it's so far out there that nobody else is willing to run with it, then sorry, you're kind of getting yourself into a little bit of trouble there. But Cowherd was out there saying that apparently the Lakers are running all these decisions by the person that they're eventually going to hire for their president of basketball operations job whenever that person is done with their playoff run. For one thing, it would be hugely illegal. Like, that would be flaunting the tampering laws or just sidestepping the tampering laws and then, like, peeing on that line as you go by. And by the way, this is the same Lakers organization that was fined $500,000 for tampering. And that wasn't a magic thing everybody seems to think that that was because of the winking thing that he did on Jimmy Kimmel. But that was actually an email that was found that Rob Pelinka was sending that the league didn't like. So the Lakers are already under this microscope. And by the way, all they have to do is ask for permission to talk to any of these executives, whether it's Masai Ujiri, whether it's Bob Myers, whether it's Sam Presti, R.C. Buford, Arne Tellem was somebody who came up quite a bit today. All that the Lakers have to do is ask for permission, and they can talk to that person. So this would be the Lakers breaking tampering laws to the point, by the way, where the league would step in astronomical ways. Like, the punishment that the league would levy against the Lakers if this was actually going on would be crippling, especially if this is now the second time that they acted in this manner. So it's not worth the risk. There is another way to talk to these people, and if the Lakers are so leaky, by the way, that if this was actually going on, they are not capable of keeping that in-house. They have not shown themselves capable of keeping anything in-house, right? And so either Ramona or Woj or Sam Amick or Mark Stein, hell, even myself and Pete and Harrison, like, we would have heard about it at some point, and we didn't. And so, you know, maybe Cowherd. Now, one thing that does happen quite a bit with the Lakers is there's kind of sort of two factions of the organization right now. There's the Genie side, and then there's the Joey and Jesse side. And as a result, you kind of have the Joey and Jesse side trying to throw as much information out there that can get everybody rallying around the names that get thrown out there as a way to put pressure on Genie. And get her to notice, like, this is what your fans want. This is what Lakers fans want. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem like she seems to be heeding any of that reaction and is going to stick with Pelinka. So That's where we are. Let's take another quick second here, pay a couple bills. When we come back, I'm going to get to the rest of your guys' questions. All right, final segment here. I'm going to try to race through all of the questions that I can possibly get to. Let's start here with Costellocht. I don't know how to pronounce the name. But anywho, the two most valuable franchises in the NBA, the Knicks and the Lakers, are equally the two worst-run franchises. Which team can turn it around first and why? This would be a fun debate in a crossover show with Locked On Knicks. First off, Let's hold on. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on calling the Lakers the Knicks West. The Knicks, for all of the hype of the Knicks, they've won one title, and that happened almost 50 years ago. Okay, so let's hold on a little bit here. They have spent more time irrelevant than they have been relevant. The idea of MSG as basketball mecca is just fraudulent. The closest thing to actual basketball mecca where we've seen actual history, the closest thing to it is probably either Staples Center or before then it was the Western Forum. If you want to make a case for the old garden that the old Boston Garden, then maybe you can make an argument for that. But it's not MSG. There hasn't been nearly enough history there. Now, if you want to count college basketball history, then fine, I guess. But most of those, the Big East hasn't produced as many all-timers as other conferences have, right? Or enough all-timers to call MSG the mecca of basketball. Let's calm down a little bit there. And then, so which team is more likely to turn it around? I mean, it depends on this offseason, right? The Knicks seem to believe that they're getting Kevin Durant and they're getting Kyrie Irving and they're going to move forward that way. In one summer, I believe they walked away with Amari Stoudemire and then Carmelo Anthony and then Tyson Chandler. Like those were, I don't know if that was all in the same offseason, but at the very least, those happened back to back to back, kind of. And they thought that they were going to run stuff for a really long time, and then it didn't work out that way. And Carmelo Anthony was just mired in mediocrity. Like the Knicks always find a way to screw this up. The one thing that I'll say, though, and it's something that is a legitimate concern, is because of Jeannie's desire to only hire people who are closest around her, that is one of the all-time cliches of nepotistic children of great people, right? Like that sycophancy, like this idea of just surrounding oneself with yes people, so as to feel better about yourself and to be affirmed with every decision that you make immediately. Those are the things that somebody who is more interested in enjoying the life of somebody who inherits that incredible franchise than somebody who actually wants to live up to the expectations that come with inheriting that great franchise. And that's what Jim Dolan has been living through. That's how he has been running the Knicks for God knows how long now. And as I said earlier, I think there are a few things that separate Jeannie from Jim and make them different people. But I do think, though, that there is reason to worry. And this choice of hers to keep Rob Pelinka around at the cost of some of the great executives out there, like that's a legitimate mistake. And what it does is, so let's say Rob Pelinka is okay as a GM. Not good, not great, not bad. He's just there, right? That still means the Lakers passed up on the opportunity to get a great executive, to make a home run hire, a no doubt about it hire. And that's the pressure that she's under right now. And you know what? if it doesn't work out, maybe the fans can pressure Jeannie in ways that Knicks fans haven't been able to pressure Jim. Who knows? Next question here comes from Corona Dude. It's a good beer. Corona Light is better than Corona. I'm willing to go out on a limb on that crazy hot take. But both need lime. Is there a way to make a seance session and call the spirit of Dr. Buss so you can talk to Jeannie and convince her to fire Rob and hire president of basketball operations first? What is wrong of asking the Heat to talk to Pat Riley, and is a former Laker and icon in LA? Thanks. I love the show. Keep up the great work. All right. So Riley has since said that he's not interested, but I want you guys to pay attention to the timing of this. The Lakers have made it clear to multiple executives. Now, Jeannie, this is Jeannie's faction. The decision makers with the Lakers have made it clear to other executives out there that even if they come over here, they have to find a way to work with Rob Pelinka. Problem is, Rob Pelinka's reputation is so bad that these executives don't want to do that. And the timing here is interesting because they made that known. They put Rob in charge of the head coaching search, and then Pat Riley said he wasn't interested, right? And then Bob Myers kind of told that joke that he kind of sort of laughed at. Some people took it to mean that he laughed at the idea of working for the Lakers or whatever, but that's the timing there is significant. And again, it's just more writing on the wall of the direction that the Lakers are going in right now. Next question comes from Devin Jan. I have a small conspiracy theory. With Rob still here and his power growing, what if while negotiating one of Kobe's contracts, he threatened that Kobe would leave unless Rob was promised a front office job when he was done being an agent? For one thing, it's a lot more financially fruitful to be an agent. I would imagine he made more money doing that than he's making right now. But look, that theory is as good as any, right? It makes no sense that Pelinka would be prioritized over some of the executives that the Lakers are passing up on. And here's the other thing too. This choice to keep Pelinka might actually also result in missing out on the type of coach that the Lakers want to hire too. The Tyronn Lues, Monty Williams, both guys have had people close to them who have told them to stay away from the Lakers because of how toxic that situation is. And again, that all stems from this desire to run with proximity over prudence. So, yeah. Logically speaking, you could give me any conspiracy theory and there might be credence to it, because there's this decision to keep Pelinka around is not based in logic. Next question here comes from Assess the Threat. Hey, Anthony, you've mentioned multiple times on the show that you used to coach high school ball. What is one of your favorite / most proud moments from being a coach? Something like a great play you drew up to win a close big game, or being able to reach a particularly troubled kid and get them on the right track? I understand if an answer is too personal for the podcast. All right, so I have two. And I'll go quickly on both of them. So we were in some kind of a tournament championship. This was back when I was a JV coach. And we were running the set, and it kept producing wide open corner three-pointers for the best shooter on my team. He was just having a tough game, and he wasn't knocking him down. And he missed, and he missed, and he missed. Unfortunately, we were playing good enough defense that we stuck with the team that we were playing against. And the time came for this kid to have to step up. And throughout the whole game, I made a concerted effort to tell this kid, his name is Drew, I made sure to tell this kid, Drew, just stay focused, stay ready, keep firing. These are good open looks, and if you start passing him up, you're going to screw with the rhythm of the rest of our offense. And the way he was missing also made me think that eventually he was going to get right if he just saw the ball go through the hoop. There's like a semi-transition play. He gets fouled. He goes to the free throw line, knocks down both of them, and that's when I knew, okay, he at least has some forward momentum. The next possession, the other team scored. They go up by one, or no, they go up by two. But at this time, I thought that Drew was going to be open because of the way that they were defending him all game. And I thought that if he was open, that he was going to knock down the shot, having seen the ball go through the hoop. So ran a set to get him that corner three-pointer that he was just missing all game. He gets the ball, he shoots it from the corner, he knocks it down, we win the championship. And I just think it's a, you know, it's a kind of story that if you stick with good process, eventually it works out. It might not always work out. And had Drew missed that shot, I would have had a ton of angry parents. I would have had a few angry players because I stuck with this kid when I could have gone in an opposite, in a different direction. But you know what? I stuck by my guns. I decided to roll with the kid that helped us get there, and he helped that decision pay off. And then the other one, it's a different kind of story. We had this kid, Troy, who was insanely talented. He wound up being a really good football player. But he came to practice, and he really liked the coach that I was replacing. And he would come to practice, and one day he came to practice, and all the kids were there stretching, warming up, getting ready, and he's sitting there on the sideline just kind of joking around with his shoes untied. And my rule when I was coaching was always, you're there, you know, if you're 15 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late, and late never happens, right? So we're 5 minutes before practice. This kid is sitting there with his shoes untied, and I said, what's going on here? And he goes, oh, I usually warm up and I practice with my shoes untied. And I said, no, you don't. And he said, yeah, actually I do. That's kind of my thing. It's my, and I said, so if you sprain an ankle, does that thing make very much sense for you? If your shoe flies off and it lands under where somebody else if it stops, to rest at under where one of your teammates is landing and they sprain an ankle, then what, right? Tie your shoes. And he said, no, I don't really feel like it. And he was already a troublemaker. And I just said, you know what, Troy? You're a really talented kid. I think you're going to be really good at something athletic, but it's not going to be basketball. It's not going to be on this team. And this is after months of having to deal with this kind of stuff, right? And I asked him to leave. I said, call your parents. If you can drive home, great, but yeah, I don't want you on this team. So fast forward a few years, and this was when he was a freshman. And fast forward a few years, and I was doing security for one of the school's football games. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the game, and I'm paying attention to everything else going on. And this older gentleman walks up, and he goes, hey, are you everybody knows me as Fred. He goes, hey, are you Coach Fred? And I go, yeah, what's up? He goes, hey, I'm Troy's dad. I go, oh, boy. And he goes, no, I wanted to say thank you. Because that bit of humbling that you offered to him there, that really set him straight. He really took it hard that he wasn't able to play basketball. He focused heavily on school and on football, and he's now getting ready to go to, I forget which school it was. I think it was like some school in Utah, on a full ride with a football and academic scholarship. And you know, I'm not taking full credit. I don't even know how much credit to take there, if any, right? But if it was a wake up call for him, then awesome. Obviously we missed him that season, and you know, we wound up winning league anyway. And he could have been a really good basketball player probably. But at the end of the day, I thought it was disrespectful to his teammates, and I thought it was disrespectful to me, and I thought it was disrespectful to him. And, you know, it worked out. It worked out for both of us. Next question here comes from Johnny K. Music. Hey, Anthony, new Lakers fan, longtime LeBron fan, and enjoying the podcast and the amount of passion you have for the team and the news surrounding them. With news of David Griffin going to the Pelicans, I was actually excited. Due to his history with LeBron, I believe there's a much greater chance of him being willing to entertain trade talks for AD with the Lakers now compared to Dell Dumps. Dell Dumps was done on purpose. Similarly to how James Jones helped out LeBron with the Tyson move early this season. My question, do you agree with my assessment? And if so, do you think a trade gets done this summer? If you don't agree, just lie for my sake anyway. Thanks. So I won't say that I outright disagree. There is something to that, and that was one of the first places that I went to. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Griffin has since said that he thinks he can convince Anthony Davis to stay, which is something that he had to say, to be quite honest, right? If he says that, oh yeah, we're getting ready to trade him, well then there goes his leverage and any leverage that he had at any point. And then you know, the fact that the Pelicans didn't hire Mike Zarin, the Celtics assistant GM, that gives the Lakers a little bit more chance than had Zarin been getting ready to send him, being Anthony Davis, to Danny Ainge. So there is a couple sources for optimism. The number one reason I'm a little hesitant on even all of that, though, is because Gail Benson is a billionaire who is being told by an employee to send him somewhere, and billionaires do not like being told what to do. And we've seen that play out with every superstar who was asked for a trade and given a list of destinations. None of them have actually gone where they put in the request to go. So, yeah, maybe the Lakers get back into it, and maybe Magic's the non-present of Magic helps out here. But Pelinka doesn't have a great reputation here. Gail Benson isn't a fan of the Lakers and isn't a fan of Anthony Davis right now, and as such, I'm not positive how that works out. Last few questions here. King Wadester says, first off, I want to say I like Kuzma. Kuzma is solid. He works for the team, is a good scorer, and has good work ethic. But I think Lonzo and Ingram have much higher ceilings than him. Who are your all-time great player comparisons to our young guys? Like in terms of play style and all-time success, I compare Lonzo to Gary Payton. That's a pretty good one. Ingram to Durant, I don't really see that one. But for Kuzma, I say Lamar Odom tops. Well, Lamar Odom was really freaking good. I think for the sake of this argument here, Gary Payton's a good one for Lonzo. I also like the Jason Kidd one, especially because Jason Kidd struggled to shoot as a young NBA player. Ingram is tougher. I think Ingram is unique. He's not nearly as good a scorer as Durant was when he entered the league. He is very good defensively, and I got to see what he is told to focus on this upcoming summer. If he can figure some things out, he can be the first Brandon Ingram, and I think that's what we all should be hoping he focuses on, because the more he tries to be Kevin Durant, the more he hears that crap, the tougher he's going to be on himself, and the tougher his growth is going to be overall. Hey, Anthony, love the show. I remember a tweet Woj tweeted when the Lakers signed LeBron, something along the lines that Kawhi's plans remain the same to specifically become a Laker, even with LeBron there. What specifically has changed? From what we've heard, either a lot or nothing. It's been really hard to figure that out. The Clipper talk started like a month afterwards, I believe. Lastly, what do you think about the Twitter user I Got Sources says we asked for permission to interview Jerry? Someone said it's Rob Pelinka's burner. That's fun. That's a fun theory. Here's the thing about non-journalists trying to act like journalists. When a journalist or somebody who comes from even a little bit of that background gets information, they sit on it a little bit, they dig a little bit more, they talk to somebody from another aspect of that situation, a different angle from that situation, they combine the two stories that they get, and that's what they tend to report. Now, some of that has dissipated a little bit with this need to be first on stuff, but still, generally speaking, that's how people the people that you trust, the Amics, the Wojes, the Ramonas, all of those guys and girls, that's how they operate, right? And so for people like I Got Sources, or I don't know, even I don't know, people who are not in that class of reporter, what they'll do is they'll get information from one side of it and they'll report it as if that's the definite story. And in this case, the second half of you know, I Got Sources' story for Jerry West is that Jeannie Buss's half of the organization, her camp, is not interested in working with them, and it becomes a non-starter. So I think – you know, the other half of the organization might want to interview Jerry West and might be back channeling to be able to try to get that interview. But I don't think it's necessarily going down the way that he's quote unquote reporting it. Let's go. There's another question here for for Pete and I. So I will save that one for a future day. Another one for Pete and I that we'll save for a later day. QBreezy12 asks, if they do a 30 for 30 on Russell Westbrook in the playoffs, will it be called 6 for 30? Ouch. Oh, man. Yeah, I think that's a good one. I think I said this last night watching Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook kind of go at it. They bumped into each other and Russell kind of flopped. It was like in the second quarter or something like that. And in that moment, I knew, yep, Russell already lost this game. He's going to get way too tied up in trying to one-up Damian Lillard. He's going to make it a one-on-one thing when Paul George is the better player anyway, and they're better going through him. And lo and behold, that's how it turned out. Remember, he did that last year with Ricky Rubio, where Rubio had like a triple-double, and Russ was saying he's going to bust him or something like that, and then Rubio like got him two quick fouls in the first like 30 seconds of the game because Russell was trying to play one-on-one defense 95 feet from the basket and is not capable of doing that without fouling. So I think like the way I put it is he's like the worst angry player in the NBA, and I'd stand by that. Last question. JBlade25 writes, if Cali happened to fall from the rafters at Staples Center and Lance Stephenson heroically was able to catch and save her, would you be able to say a single positive thing about him? I have said positive things about him this year. Like, of the Lakers signings this year, he was one of the guys who was, like, fine. Like, he wasn't a disaster on Rondo's level, right? He wasn't nearly as bad as Michael Beasley was. He just doesn't make very much. He didn't make sense as a signing when they did sign him. And he has that background that makes me iffy. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. Thank you very much for tuning in. I will talk to you again tomorrow. And I'm losing my voice.